Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Scumbags, this is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Ellie Gibson,
and it is me, Helen Thorne,
and it is our guest. Who's our guest today? It's you, say
George Egg.
George Egg. Yes,
George Egg, the snack hacker.
The snack hacker. I love it. Just bringing the brand in straight from the top.
I am now the snack hacker.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What? Okay. For anyone who isn't familiar with the snack hacker, what is a snack hacker?
The snack hacker is a series that I created during lockdown because I couldn't go on stage, where I interfere with existing. Well, it's kind of mixed.
Here's the thing. Going with that. Food, one like food.
Yeah, you've spent a lot of time at home.
This is a food-based exercise, to be clear.
You pimp up.
Pimp, that's the word.
Pimp is better than interfering, yes. I think.
Well, no, because sometimes it really is just like... just
meddling
sort of,
with.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I better get on to what it is. Snacks. So yeah. Existing snacks. So I'll take a Greg's pasty, I'll nibble the edge off, I'll open it up like a pocket, put extra ingredients inside to make it, you know, more exciting, more interesting.
What, like an extra sausage roll, perhaps a yum-yum?
Yes, yeah. I'll put
like a bird in a bed roast.
A donut in a steak bake. That's
like
what I'd
like. Costa in a Waterstones.
Exactly like that. We love a Greggs, don't we, Helen?
Absolutely, because we're on tour a lot, and often when you go to the services, that's the most appealing thing.
Mm.
Not chopsticks, never chopsticks.
No. Oh, no. And also, let's face it, extremely good value.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, a full meal for like $3.49.
Very good.
Greggs are pretty,
very carb-heavy, but very delicious. Now, you go on tour as well, George. You're not just sitting there hacking snacks all day and putting it on the internet, are you?
No, which is hence the kind of snack hacking, I suppose, really, because, I've been a touring comedian for... Well, I've been a stand-up since I was in my teens.
Amazing.
I did my first... paid gig at Up the Creek when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
How mad is that?
Oh, that's when my father was still doing comedy.
I know.
That's
I think your dad came to one of my first gigs at Up the Creek. I remember
that's
in the
sort
audience.
Of Malcolm Hardy times.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, no, he really took me under his wing when I started.
Oh, did dad by any chance give you some constructive feedback after your gig? He does like to do that to us over a curry usually.
Do you know what? I remember him being very nice, but then I've always got memories of your parents being just the nicest people in the world.
Oh, well, that's you didn't.
Come on, let's have it. You two have known each other a very long time.
Yeah,
I think possibly my whole life, George.
Well, I'm older than you, so yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you being born. I remember.
Do you?
Yeah, I remember Ray.
What was it? What was I like? Was I a beautiful baby?
Well, I remember. I don't remember you when you were really, really tiny. I remember when you had all your big curly hair and very sweet cherubic child.
Yes, cherubic looking child. Yes.
But I don't remember you being a baby, but I remember you being a very little girl and going around to your house and for parties and things like
and
that.
And your parents were friends, is that right? Is that how you got to know each other?
Yeah.
There's some sort of baby. Was your dad the babysitter or something? There's some kind of babysitting connection, isn't there?
I remember your dad babysitting for us.
Oh.
Yeah. And telling other kids at school, going, someone from the young ones. is our babysitter, and they didn't believe. And then we have to try and explain, where is the guy, the policeman? No, it's not my episode.
The one,
policeman. He's not Neil.
I've spent 40 years doing that, George. I know that conversation very well. If for anyone who doesn't know, for some bizarre reason, my dad, Jim, is a comedian, sometimes still in the van, even just now. He tells us jokes. But also, he was in The Young Ones. He played a lot of racist policemen and things like that. He's not a racist in real life or a policeman, just to be clear.
No, he's actually very much the opposite of both racist and policemen. Really,
he is. He is the opposite. I remember you being a teenager, I think, so I don't know what age I would have been, but I remember you doing magic shows.
Yeah.
You put on these amazing magic shows just for, like, kids in your house.
That's literally where I started.
Yeah.
In doing performing. So, yeah, I did, when I was maybe 13, 14, I started doing little magic shows at home and then started doing them at children's parties.
Yeah.
And then from that, did street entertaining, and then from that, stand up. And
So at what point did it get? Since when, sort of from magic to stand up, and then you thought, you know what, this act needs steak bakes. How did we get here?
And a cement mixer.
Well, yes. the food came, going back to you saying about me being a touring comedian, because being on tour, I was, you know, you get hungry on tour, and like we were saying, you go to Greg's at petrol stations and so on, and I would, I'd go back to my hotel after, I'd do a weekend away somewhere, and I'd go back to the hotel hungry and feeling a bit mischievous and being into, so I've been into cooking for, you know, 20 plus years outside of doing comedy. And I just started mucking about in the hotel room, seeing what I could cook with the iron and the kettle and the hairdryer and all that sort of thing, and made some little films of those, and I thought maybe I could do it as a podcast, and I recorded the audio of one and wasn't really sure what I was doing.
Food and podcasts aren't great, we've found, and also if you eat, people get really cross.
Yeah, no, I've heard that listening to Off Menu, and they were saying how people get really, they get loads of,
we get very cross reviews on.
Yeah,
we always do ham review every Christmas. We've done 7 in a row, and they said when you eat ham, it makes me feel very unwell.
So now
ham
when review. I'm editing, she cooks a ham and I cook a ham,
yeah,
and then our guests have to blind taste the ham and decide who is the winner. Helen, I think, is in the lead, but I think I won last.
You won
year.
Last year.
Get that in
very,
there.
Very, very.
What
good.
Was your, secret?
I got a recipe off the internet.
What was your glaze?
The glaze was double sugar. That was the secret. I found this recipe on tamingtwins.com, and it was for, you put it in the slow cooker. That's what first attracted me to the recipe, because I'm quite lazy. I like a slow cooker. Put it in the slow cooker. I think is it pineapple juice? Was it? Anyway,
there was a lot. No, it was cider. It was cider. And then it was it honey and
brown sugar.
Oh my God.
And then a bit of mustard. And the double sugar, mate. I wouldn't have predicted it.
Basically a ham lollipop. It was fucking delicious.
I think that is the secret of it is, just an awful lot of sugar.
Yeah.
Because it caramelises and you get that crack. And that with the juicy meat, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And if you're not eating sugar for health reasons, a lot of butter. That's what I always say. It's all good. So, so tell us about the stage show then. Helen mentioned the cement mixer there. I mean, we've seen your show and we love it. But for anyone who hasn't seen it, what goes on in the George Egg stage show?
I cook on stage. So I cook on stage, but using unconventional methods. So the first show came from doing the hotel cooking. I turned that into a solo show. So in that show, I had, the stage was set up like the inside of a hotel room, and I had a mini bar that I bought at a charity shop, and an ironing board and a trouser press and so on. And I cooked a 3-course meal using just that equipment. Then the second show was called DIY Chef, and that was in a shed. So I had a load of power tools. And then the most recent show, the one that you guys saw, was called Movable Feast, and it was about cooking on the move. So I had a laptop that it's not actually a laptop, it looks like a laptop, but it's a George Foreman grill made to look like a laptop so you can cook on the train, and a cement mixer stolen, I'm doing inverted commas marks with my fingers, from Roadworks, and an engine that I cooked on. I do stand up while cooking using unconventional methods, and then at the end of the show, the audience get to eat, to try the food.
I'm not going to say that was my favourite bit, but I did love it. I was like, oh no, now we actually get to eat the food. We actually get to eat the bloody food.
At your own risk, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
I stress that.
And it was very good as well. I won't name them, but I once went to a show by some TV chefs and they made a spaghetti carbonara and it was dreadful. It was all scrambled eggy.
No.
George Egg.
Oh no, I really am. So when I do because people often say, oh yeah, how do you manage to do the cooking and the talking at the same time, like that? And it's just practice, and I practice the dishes and I make sure the timings work exactly with the script, like learning a piano piece, you know. Just you learn the right hand, learn the left hand, and then it takes ages and then you get them together and then it works. But I'm really fastidious about making sure that the food is really good, because people are going to taste it. And I will get people at the end of the show as much coming up saying that was entertaining as going, that dressing, sorry, can you go through?
Have you got a fact sheet?
Brainy mustard.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I was going to say, actually, cooking and talking and timing is a lot down to parenting as well. Like when you were talking about that, I was thinking, God, that reminds me of sort of like, you'll start the dinner and the kids are like, oh, I've got to do this. Mom, I'm doing a poo. And you're like, you're trying to cook and talk and manage times and all that sort of stuff.
So much so.
And you've been a parent for how many years, George?
25 years.
Wow.
25 and a half years.
Oh. Wow. And you've got 3 kids?
Yeah.
Wow. You did that extra one.
Yes.
I say extra because I was thinking, well, nobody wants more than 2.
Well, I'm of 2.
Yeah.
And you're of 2.
Yeah. I'm of 5.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wow.
But my father famously said, if I had my time again, I'd stop at 2.
What number are you?
4.
All right.
Yeah, which is a lovely thing to say to your daughter's face. Yeah.
Yes, I started quite young. Mm. My wife's a bit older than me, so I suppose her biological clock was ticking and... Yeah, and but it was
got on with it.
All planned, and we just thought, yeah, let's start having kids. So I was only just 23 when
brilliant.
Eldest was born.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, by modern standards, I mean, in the 40s, I mean, that's a bit late, but yeah, these days,
well done, Grandpa.
But in the sort of modern times, that's, I guess, I don't know, did that feel early to you, or did it just feel right?
It felt... I've mixed feelings about. I mean, I'm so glad that I had kids when I did. The only kind of not regret. I think I feel like I went through a bit of a midlife crisis really early in my sort of late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Just feeling that kind of redundancy, you know, and going, well, I've kind of done what I was biologically programmed to do. So why am I here? What's the point of me now?
Turns out it's to make scrambled eggs in a cement mixer. Yeah. God's purpose.
But that's totally true, because I think what's really interesting is if you look at my career, I'm doing inverted commas again, listeners.
I'm so sorry, this is audio. It's very animated.
But if you look at my, you know, what I did as far as performing goes, I really plateaued. So I got, you know, I kind of got on the stand-up circuit. And then I didn't do anything apart from just, I had an act that sort of serviced itself, and I hardly put any new material in it, and didn't try and get on telly or anything like that. There was a healthy comedy circuit out there that was making me enough money to live off. And I think I put my creative energy into being a parent, really.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was kind of 6 years ago. So, sort of when my son was 19 and my youngest was about 15 then, 15, 16. And that's when I started doing the solo shows and started, you know, doing the cooking on stage. And since then, everything's been really... I've just been really busy and active mentally on stage and as a performer. But that was all post them growing up.
Mm. And I think that's right, because I think... we're in our 40s now, and our children still very much need us. And so when we're on tour, we try and have like 2 nights away, because my kids are 10 and 13, and you know, I can't leave them alone, sadly. Yeah. Just yet. But in 5 or 6 years' time, I think, you know...
Oh, we're going to fucking Vegas, mate. We're doing a run. We're going to be warm-up for Celine Dion.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. That's
but
the
I
goal.
But, I mean, you're both really prolific. I mean, you're doing a new show, whatever you... sort of 18 months
every year there's at least half a new show, and it just keeps evolving, which is really great. So this is our 9th year doing live comedy, and next year will be 10 years, so we've decided to do greatest hits.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing next.
Yeah. I saw that today. I was looking you up and I was like, he's doing a best of show. Oh, we're doing a greatest hits show. Oh yeah.
So best of show, what's going to be in the best of show?
So each show has got 3 dishes.
Yeah.
And there's 3 shows, so essentially it's going to be one dish from each of the three shows.
Right.
But the equipment,
can you reveal
equipment?
What you're cooking? Or is
I don't know yet.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, I haven't worked it out yet. I've got these three shows, so I'm going to, I think I'll probably do the laptop one. I'm going to try and make it slightly more portable. I mean, it's still going to need an estate car, but the last show, so each show has grown as far as props go. I mean,
we know that scenario, yeah.
We've got a massive van now, and now I think we'll have to
We've got a ride on Canon at the moment, George.
Really?
Yeah, because we do a share number. So I come on halfway through on the ride, which our lovely friend Rose constructed out of a child's trike from John Lewis's. And then and an enormous, slightly too long piece of plumber's piping, which she's wrapped in gaffer tape. I think it looks exactly like the share video. I think it's indistinguishable.
It's a shame that we don't have the men, but that's for the greatest hit show. We're going to go all bells and whistles next year.
Yeah.
Like we'll get, you know, more elaborate costumes, maybe even some projections.
Doves. I want doves.
Yeah.
Flying out of the downstairs.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
All I want is to emerge from underneath the stage like Beyoncé. I've always wanted that thing. We'll just have to find, I don't know. Anyway, and what's really nice is that we could actually have a narrative arc, because when we started, we were doing stuff about nappies and toddlers, and now we're doing stuff about teenagers and menopause. So we actually could put it in some kind of story of motherhood, because it's a story of us, basically.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of menopause gags in your show, George, or...?
I haven't. I've got... Do you know, I was trying to write something about... Because my wife's kind of perimenopausal, and I wanted to write something about... You know when... in a film, when the pilot's ill... And someone who doesn't know how to fly a plane is trying to land the plane, and they're in the tower trying to tell them what to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes my wife calls me up because she needs to print something.
Mm-hmm. This is like,
and it's and it's Nelly. Yeah. it's more stressful. And I think she has admitted that's, you know.
So you still got the show. And then the YouTube, so is it YouTube or Instagram or both you're doing now mainly? What are you just chucking it all
Instagram
on?
Instagram mainly. Yeah. I do put it on YouTube, but for whatever reason, I don't really seem to have got any traction there. I mean, it's all on YouTube if you look up George Egg or Snack Hacker. But on Instagram is where it seems to have really taken off. In November 2020, just feeling like I couldn't, you know, go on stage and having this, you know, sort of urge to do creative stuff, I started making these little films and put them on Instagram, where, as I say, the first episode, they're only 2 minutes long each, they're really short, and the first episode I just went to a Greg's, got a cheese and onion pasty, nibbled the edge off, put some pickled jalapenos in.
Oh yes, we love a pickled jalapeno.
We do.
Honestly,
anything pickled,
that combination, just the creamy cheesy potato and then the little bit of vinegary heat was just sensational.
Get in.
And I'm all gushing about it on camera. Oh, this is so nice. So you've got to try it, and giving it to the camera person, who's the person who's always behind the camera, called camera person. So I did that one and I thought, this is fun, and maybe people will watch it. So now I'm up to 55 episodes I've done. And,
wow, it's brilliant. And I like when you get the celebs in. Tell us about, because you've had some very famous faces who've given you, like the Mackenzie Crook one was amazing.
Isn't that beautiful?
Please tell the listener about that, because that actually makes, I'm starting to salivate now just thinking
it's salivating, but also the film that he, so with the guests, initially in the first lot, I'm good pals with John Robbins. And he had told me some years before about an idea of getting a McFlurry and an espresso from McDonald's and just pouring the espresso over the McFlurry to make a McAffogato.
Yeah.
And so I did a little video of that, and I did a Jack Munro one as well, who I know through food stuff, and such a good idea. So this is, you get a Bombay Bad Boy pot noodle.
Oh, yeah.
And you put just a big blob of peanut butter in it when you make it.
And it's honestly,
I love
it is like sticky satay. And so I what I do, so sometimes it's just the guest's idea, sometimes I'll put something on top as well, give it my twist. So with her one, I did that. I also put in some sesame snaps, which you crush up and sprinkle those in, and you get the little bit of sesame and the sweetness and a bit of coriander just ripped up and put in there. Honestly, it just turns it from a pot noodle into such a gourmet dish. It's the complexity is there.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just the guest's idea. Sometimes it's that they've got a problem. So I had a episode with Joe Lycett, and he was talking about a samosa chart that he gets from a place in Birmingham around the corner from him, a restaurant called Zindia. Give him a little plug, because mm-hmm. he said it's the best. And he wanted a samosa chart. So I worked out a way of doing that using tinned parsnip soup, spicy parsnip soup, Baxter's tinned spicy parsnip soup and chickpeas mixed together. And you put sev on top, you know, like the little like Bombay mix kind of thing. So I used some Rice Krispies with a bit of chili powder in and put that on. But you get, so it kind of looks all a bit nuts, but you know, you shut your eyes, put it in your mouth, and you're getting the little crispness like the Bombay mix thing, and then you're getting the flavour of the sort of chickpea and the spicy soup together. Feels like the chickpea curry, and then it's just a shop-bought samosa chopped up and heated up, and
so, and then the restaurant goes out of business because everyone's just making it at home. It's a good job you gave him a plug, really. I've got one, although I did give this to Jess Fostercue, I think, when she was doing a thing. Jacob's cream cracker, obviously. Philadelphia, obviously, real Philadelphia, not fucking around. And then a quite thick entire layer of Patak's lime pickle. Because then you get the crisp cracker, the creamy cheese.
I bet that so works. And in a way, that's almost the same flavour profile as my first snack hacker, isn't it? Because the biscuit's the pastry, the Philadelphia creamy. Is the filling of the pasty, and then the lime pickle is a bit like the...
What would you add to that to pimp that out a bit? How would you add your twist to that?
I don't know if it could be improved.
Mm. Oh, I reckon a bit of fresh coriander and a bit of...
A bit of fresh coriander is always good.
Some crushed peanuts, maybe, for a little...
That's a good idea,
I think a sprinkle of dried angel, of unliquefied angel delight, just for sweetness.
Which one? Butterscotch? Yeah, of course.
Lovely. I might say...
don't try me. Don't test out my shit food credentials.
Have you ever done anything? We haven't mentioned this for a long time on the podcast, but it's a long favourite. A Frey Bentos pie.
Oh,
I've got an idea for a Frey Bentos pie.
Could we do a collabo? Because it's one of Ellie's...
Eat the top, give the rest to the dog. Because I have thought of doing that occasionally, to be honest. Much as I love a Frey Bentos.
What's the filling that you would go for? I suppose it doesn't matter if you're...
And for the international listeners, can we just backtrack and tell them what a Frey Bentos pie is?
Well, obviously, they're all handmade in Argentina. Yeah. Which is where the name comes from. Well, you explain it, George.
It's a tinned... product, so it's preserved.
Have you ever heard of anything more delicious, foreign listener? But book a flight to Heathrow. I want some.
It is fascinating, though, isn't it? Because it looks like a thin bowl. It looks like a shallow bowl with a metal lid.
Like a dog's bowl.
And you take the lid off with your tin opener. And then it's got a very unattractive looking
pallid,
wet... raw pastry top.
Like someone's taken off some human flesh almost and laid that on the top.
Yes, and left it. Maybe human flesh from a sort of...
A jaundiced person.
Or someone who's been found in the Thames. After a sort of
it's just
fortnight.
Like a section of someone's buttock. That sort of very nice...
I tell you what it looks like. Have you ever made kombucha?
No.
It looks like... So the SCOBY... is the weird sort of jellified, sort of like jellyfish like
this is what I've never
thing
made
that sits on top.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, and then you put it in the oven and it bakes like a pie, and the unattractive pastry top puffs up like a very nice puff pastry, all crispy on top, a little bit damp underneath where it's touched the filling.
I like my pastry a little bit raw on the bottom.
You want to soak that up. Yeah. And then where the filling has touched the tin, it kind of caramelises and sticks to it. And actually, they are really...
For a tin product, George.
Phenomenally good.
As tin products go, they're in my top 10, definitely.
Well, should I tell you my idea for the Frey Bentos?
Yes.
I'm not sure. Oh, now this is my history. I don't know if it's Dickensian or Victorian, but oysters used to be incredibly cheap. And they were just like sort of pauper's food in the past, let's say.
Olden times.
Yeah. Oysters.
They were the scampion lemon fries of their day. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And they used to put them in pies. So I thought, as an experiment, you buy one of the meat, maybe steak and kidney or steak and ale or one of the meat Frey Bentos pies, carefully ease back that horrible bit of wet pastry, just shove in some raw oysters, put it back down, bake that, and I don't know if it would work or not. I've never had an ale and oyster pie, but
that's
it was a
serpent turf pie.
Yeah, but it was a real thing. It's a real, you know.
I'd like to see you in the appropriate dress making it. Could you do that?
Oh, yes, like in puffling pants.
Yes!
Although I wouldn't know. I don't know what if I should be in sort of a top hat and curly moustache.
Yes.
Or maybe that and then big.
Film it in black and white as well. That would be nice.
With a little thread.
You're good at multitasking. Make it while you're on a penny farthing. Just going round and round in a circle, shelling or chucking oysters.
And it could generate some sort of heat thing, the small wheel.
Yeah. Look at us just firing off ideas for you, George. You're very welcome. I look forward to seeing it in Edinburgh. And are you doing Edinburgh this year?
Yes, I'm doing the best of there.
What is the most popular snack hack you've ever done?
There's a few that really got loads of views and loads of comments. One was the naan. Is it naan or naan?
I never know. I say naan, but I'm from London, so I say bath and mask. My husband gets very cross. I don't know.
Naan. I think I'd say naan.
Naan bread. Okay, yeah. So we're going naan.
But then naan means bread.
Your nan is your father's mother, so you don't want to be confusing.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're not going to make, which depends where they're from, what sort of bread they're going to make.
Yeah.
Well, my grandma's died when she was 100. She's not going to make any bread.
No.
Yeah. No, my grandma, she didn't make any bread now.
Dead bread.
I don't know what happened there.
Just take a moment to remember our dead grandmother's not making any bread, naan or naan.
She did. She was a good baker, though, my grandma. Yeah.
Did she call it naan or naan?
Well, not bread, but like, you know, pies and things.
Yeah.
No oysters.
So naan bread.
Naan bread.
I'm going with naan.
Going with naan.
So naan pizza. So I. So that was more. Here's the thing that's been so nice about doing Snack Hacker is I. It can be whatever I want it to be because the reason. Here's the other reason why I started doing it was because I've been in this game for so long and had so many meetings with TV people where it's all exciting and I'm sure you know. Been in the same
every second week.
Number of times.
We love you, and then they ghost and you like silent. A terrible boyfriend. Yes.
When anything has got any kind of traction, I immediately feel like this is going in a direction that I wasn't planning it to go in. And I'm then why don't we have this person? You know, but they're not anything to do with this. You know, so it always feels like you start losing control. And I'm a bit of a control freak, which is, I think, why I've always done a solo show. So the naan pizza, it's not one where I'm interfering with an existing snack. It's just I got a naan, one of the big circular ones that you can, they're quite hard to find, but that's what you want. Because when it's a saddle shape, it just doesn't feel like a pizza, does it?
No. Really?
No.
No.
So circular naan. And then the sauce was just tin tomatoes, and then it's all tubes. So I got a tube of garlic puree, a little squirt of that, a little squirt of harissa, a little squirt of sun-dried tomato puree.
Oh, yeah.
Squirt of anchovy puree.
Fucking umami so central. Boff. Yeah.
And we're not mixing this in, we're just dotting it.
I don't know, into the tomatoes in a bowl. Okay. Hand, just squidge it together, bit of that on there, torn up mozzarella, bit of basil, put it in the oven. Yeah. And honestly, it's just... What rewatch that episode?
Yeah.
Or watch that episode if you haven't seen it, listeners.
Yes.
And it's so honestly, it was just great. So that was one that was really popular. A twist I did on McDonald's breakfast muffin, tremendously popular.
I love this one.
And so that was with veggie haggis.
Yeah.
But it was more about recreating the kind of the melted cheese. So the whole thing of making it using processed cheese, wrapping it, leaving it for a couple of minutes so that when you start unwrapping it, it's stuck to the paper.
Very good.
Because
that's
the thing with McDonald's. When they started doing the, you know, make to order thing, you don't want a burger made to order. You want one that's been sat there.
Oh, yes.
Sort of congealing and getting a little bit, you know, I like unattractive looking.
Yeah, when the cheeseburger, you could almost post through your letterbox. It's very thin. And
one that looks like it's been sat on.
Yeah. Exactly right. And I will say my favourite actually is your pot noodles with the broken up chicken wings from KFC on the top with the boiled egg.
Yes. That was another really popular one. Although, super noodles.
Super noodles,
so super noodles and then a sachet of miso soup in the bottom of the bowl. Super noodles, boil the egg in with the noodles.
Yep.
Which I got a lot of people going, oh, you shouldn't put an egg in with it. But it's boiling water. It's not going to, you know.
No.
What? Wait, what? You shouldn't put...
I think because the egg has come out the inside of a chicken, so worried about the condition of the outside of the egg.
It's boiling water.
Well, exactly. That's what I said. Yeah.
If you're going to eat the fucking egg, yeah.
If you eat fucking McDonald's, you can shut your fucking face.
And then the egg goes. And then I bought just some hot wings from KFC, and yeah, shredded the meat off, put those on top, and it was just a really good bowl of ramen. That if you got given that in a little cafe, you go, this is nice ramen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ting.
I wonder how they did this.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Hampstead, here's £27.50. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
No, my favourite one is the... Did you see the Greg's fish pie?
No.
No.
So that was the 50th episode. And so my kind of beef was that there's... Beef is that... My beef is that there's no fish. My beef is that there's so few fish options. Yeah, there's apart from filet fish at McDonald's, Greg's don't do anything fish. Burger King don't do anything fish. There's hardly any fish options. Even you go to pizza restaurants.
They're lacking omega-3s. I won't have it. Yes.
Fish pie is just so good. Fish pie, you know, normally topped with mashed potato, maybe cheese on top of there. So that was the kind of thinking. So I got, it was a Greg's cheese and onion again. And I put in it broken up smoked mackerel.
Yes.
Seafood sticks, you know, your little
crab sticks.
Some of those ripped.
I love
up.
That they're not allowed to call them crab sticks anymore because there's zero fucking crab in them. Just
it was a partridge,
isn't
it?
Seafood sticks.
Crab sticks do not contain any crab. Another one of those. Same time tomorrow. and pickled cockles.
Pickled,
so you get a little bit of vinegariness and a little bit of
things,
little sort of, you know, the texture and everything there, and then some tarragon.
Oh no. No, I don't.
You're
know.
Not, you're
lost
not into
tarragon.
The aniseed.
Don't like it.
You could admit the tarragon.
I like aniseed, but I don't like tarragon.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. I don't know. But I don't like dill either. Mm.
Well,
fun facts.
Well, you could admit. You could put parsley in.
Fine, parsley. Like parsley. Yeah. My husband's allergic to it, but fuck him. Yeah.
But then, and then, say that's an unusual thing to be allergic to.
Oh, I think it's an affectation.
But anyway, and then the other thing, apart from the tarragon and the fish things, crushed scampi fries, which you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
And honestly, the flavor, first of all, it looks amazing because you've
got still encased in the pastry.
Yeah, so you kind of, it's quite a lot of
that's a delicate,
you know,
insertion.
Finding the little gaps, but the look of the pink crab stick, the sort of oranginess of the both the smoked mackerel and the scampi fries, the green of the tarragon or not, and just the textures, the crunch from the crisps and the sort of more meatiness of the cockles and the. Honestly, it's the best one. It's sensational.
Great. I need to be writing these down. So the thing is, I'm having my kitchen done at the moment, and by which I mean I've knocked an enormous fucking hole in the back of my house, and I have no cooker and a tiny mini bar fridge and a microwave and a toaster. And I don't like microwave meals. I don't like, you know, the ones, not out of any sort of wanky affectation, unlike my husband. They're generally, they taste to me of glue and misery.
So here's the thing with microwaves and me. I didn't have one until recently. And my dad was such an advocate of the microwave and was always going, oh, you should get microwave, you should get microwave. And there's something I think about when you've got a parent who tells you should do something, it makes you like,
you're not the buzz of me.
Yeah.
No.
And I he died as you know recently. Both my parents died in the last few years. And it was really quite shortly after he died that I bought a microwave. Isn't that weird? And it was with the, not kind of going, now I can get one, but it wasn't until after I got one that I realised, God, it was literally, I was waiting to not be told, well, I did think you should have got one, you know. So yeah,
it's what he would have wanted.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? It's so weird, isn't it?
Do you mind if we talk about your fries and microwaves?
Because
I knew your parents as we've talked about, and they did die quite close together, didn't they?
Yeah, only about 2019 and 2020, but at the beginning and the end of each. So nearly 2 years.
And it's something Helen and I, we've been talking about, like we just did a podcast with Julia Samuel, the psychotherapist, who's that she specialises in grief, and our parents are still alive, but obviously your dad's in his 80s now,
he's 86, and he has had so many heart attacks and strokes, and I once booked a flight and got on a flight within 12 hours because he'd had a heart attack and a stroke, and he just keeps resurrecting. I don't know if it's because he's a vicar, but he's had many resurrections, and also, as I spoke on there, they got lost in the outback for 24 hours, so I thought they were dead. It's a funny story now. But we're getting close to that, and they, you know, as we talked about on the Samuel podcast, they're aware of that too, and we've got this sort of time, but you know, it is, we're at this age now, aren't we, where we have to be the grown-ups.
Yeah.
And it's a really confronting thing.
Yeah, no, it's very strange, isn't it? I was chatting with my brother about the awful situation in Ukraine, and well, certainly a week or so ago, when there was a lot of talk of Russia talking about getting their nuclear weapons
bombing the shit out of everyone.
But when I was really small, I was I'm sure sort of similar generation, so I'm sure you can empathize, but so frightened of the world ending because of nuclear weapons. And
I think our parents took us on too many CND marches. I've complained about this before.
Yeah.
My dad used to do all those benefits and all those
the day after and threads and that being, But anyway, I was so paranoid about it. And then I was talking to my brother the other day and saying, well, we're the ones who have to be the sort of the reassuring, if this had happened a few years ago, I'd be on the phone to my dad now going, what, do you think it's all going to be all right?
Mm.
You know, and he'd be the one going, well, I'm sure they're all,
That must be strange about, there must be times where you think, oh, I've just got to call mum and dad to tell them things. Was that a hard thing to kind of process, especially in the beginning?
Yeah. It certainly was. I tell you what was the weirdest thing is I would... because when I tour, it's just me. I don't have any technician or anything like that. So it's just me in the car loads.
Sounds and dreamy.
That's when... but that's when I called them.
Yeah.
And it was so weird because my dad died during lockdown, or one of the lockdowns. It wasn't until a good sort of 7 months after 7 or 8 months after he died that I started getting in the car and doing gigs again. And still, when I get in the car and I get to the end of my road and I've got my headphones in and there's this thing where I just go, oh no, I can't, I can't ring him. That's been just really strange.
Call Ellie's dad. He loves a chat.
Oh, he loves a chat, yeah.
I should do. I really should.
Yeah.
I know it's not the same, but he does love a chat, my dad. Perhaps he could do an impression of your dad, or is that just too weird? That's probably too weird.
I tell you what's really weird. I did a little trailer for... I did a little outtake for the next volume of Snackhacker yesterday. I was just doing some editing. And there's a bit where I'm just talking to the camera person about something else, and I haven't seen a speed. I'm driving along, and I haven't seen a speed bump, and I'm just way over the speed bump. I just start laughing, and I just look so much like my mum. And I never used to see it before, and now I can see myself. And it's so weird, just seeing myself and seeing the clothes I'm wearing. I'm suddenly going, I've absolutely, that whole thing of turning into your parents is so.
I did sit in your face when you came in. I nearly said, oh, you look like your mum. And then I thought that might be an upsetting or offensive thing to say.
It's nice, actually. Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah.
But it's so weird because when they're alive, if someone said, oh, you remind me of your mum, I'd be like, oh, don't say that, But yeah.
Who is across the road? Because we're across from One Tree Hill here. Did you scatter your ashes on, or we had a memorial?
It was just after my so when my dad died, it was funerals were limited, and so it was just me and my brother and our families, and then some of our cousins. So there were just a handful of us with a flask of sausages and some London gin
and a microwave
yeah. No microwave.
No.
A thermos. Oh. A wide-necked thermos.
Brilliant.
Wonderful.
It's genius.
I want my ashes scattered on One Tree Hill. That's where I'd like to...
Well, we've still got the ashes. So that was literally after the funeral,
Yeah.
We're going to scatter them over in at Hayes Common, which is somewhere we used to go and have picnics a lot when we were kids. So they've got a bench there. It's funny, when my mum died, we started arranging the bench, and then my dad died, and so we had to get in touch with him and say, we're going to have to change the plaque. Is there room for another one?
Another name. Could you pop it in?
Yeah. I want my ashes scattered at Centre Parks, but I can't decide on Woburn or Elvedon. I'll let you know. Yeah.
Half and half.
Woburn's closer, and I can hit the train.
True.
Yeah.
Now, I asked Julia Samuel this question, and obviously she's an actual psychotherapist and you're not, but as someone who's been through it, I don't know if you have not, maybe there is an answer, I don't know, but is there anything you did or that you wish you'd done to prepare yourself for losing your parents? Because as I say, it's something we are thinking about a lot. And, the sort of organiser in me thinks there must be something I can do that will make the unbearable grief easier. But perhaps that's a stupid premise. I don't know.
I wish I'd found out more about them.
Hmm.
Yeah, going through... Well, they were both quite... My dad was a real hoarder.
Yeah.
And the amount of stuff to go through. And there were... There's so many... He wrote drafts of all his letters. And there are letters going back to the 60s.
He wrote drafts? So yeah. He would write a practice letter. And yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's then, what a draft is. I don't know why I'm explaining that to you, as if you're thick.
Well, I suppose that was... I mean, you know... Often, you know, you write an email, yeah. And then you're, you know, you yes. won't hit send straight. Well, you know, you'll go over it and read over it. So I suppose in
some people do that.
Yes, no, that's true. And
so,
I have been
quite often will just send an email in all caps.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? And it. so you'll go over it. So I suppose before you could edit on a computer, people would write a draft yeah. and then go, okay, I'll edit that, blah blah blah, and then write
Sweet.
It out and send it
yeah.
off. Yeah, after between my mum dying and my dad dying. I think that would have been a good opportunity to have found out a lot more about my dad without the shadow of my mum over him.
Mm.
But, yeah, but I never did.
Oh, does yeah. I mean, has that changed your attitude to your own kids in terms of do you feel a need for them to know you better? Is that something, does it make you want to share more?
Well, funny enough, so I was talking to Nikki, my wife, about it, and we were kind of going... We haven't got anything to hide. Yeah. It's just like sort of, yeah, the stuff that I've sort of found out about my parents since are going, oh, I didn't know you were feeling like that. And I didn't know, you know, this was going on. I just feel like we've been incredibly open with our kids and never, well, first of all, we haven't got any secrets that I can think of. And anything like to do with sort of emotions or how we're feeling or if we're upset about stuff, I feel like we're very open family anyway. So so yeah, I certainly feel like, I mean, I feel like I had a really good relationship with both of them, but I just feel like maybe I could have, I think it's once when something ends, you always feel like I should have done, you know, if you leave a job, you go, oh, I should have got more engaged, or I should have more, you know, yeah. whatever. And so I think, yeah, it's the whole you don't know what you've got till it's gone. But I think, yeah, having once they died, just feeling so. After they died, I took about a year to sort their house out because, first of all, they painted it the most ridiculously bright colours everywhere and we wanted to sort of neutralise it to sell it. I mean, my old bedroom that became my mum's room was painted purple with one gold wall.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Hello, like Lawrence Llewellyn
like
Bowen.
Wow. Very nice, Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen. Sort of like a tomb.
Very royal.
But, yeah.
Nice.
But, so there was an awful lot of... time spent in the house and repairing things that need repairing, stuff like that, and a lot of that, well, a lot of it was me there by myself doing it because it was during lockdown again, so my brother's job meant that he could carry on, whereas because I wasn't performing, I had loads of spare time. So basically I said, well, look, you know, I'll take a sort of an hourly wage out of the estate while I do the decorating, and then I'll just get on with it all. But I spent so long there feeling, oh, I should have been here more while they were still alive towards the end, and feeling like actually I didn't. I mean, I think I went there a lot, and I think I was a good son, you know. But you know, feeling like actually I could have done more. Actually, I could have, when they were saying, "Oh, we've got trouble with our wisteria," I could have gone, "Well, I'll come up and I'll hire a ladder and get up there and deal with it," which is what I did, you know. After
yeah.
they died.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I talked to my brother about that and he goes, yeah, but you had the time because it was lockdown.
Yeah.
Actually, had it not been lockdown and this happened, then we would have been employing someone to do those things. So complicated by the whole world being different when it all happened as well. But yeah, I just think kind of, yeah. I don't know. There's however much you do and however much you see them.
Yeah.
You're always going to feel like, oh, well, I could have done more.
I remember a doctor saying that to me when my son Joe was born early, which I like to bang on about regularly. I remember being in the hospital and he'd been there a few weeks and he'd taken a turn for the worse. And at that point, I'd been going in in the morning, been dropping Charlie at nursery, going to the hospital, seeing Joe, coming back, dealing with Charlie, putting him to bed and then going back to the hospital. So I was going twice a day, kind of for as long as I could. And he'd taken his turn for the worse and he's fine now. It's all fine. And I remember I'd read that it's all about skin to skin contact with premature babies. And I said to the doctor in a bit of a stare, I was like, should I be here more? Do I need to be here? Should I just be here for like 20 hours? Should I just? And she was so kind, and she just put hand on my knee and was like, you're here quite a lot. You're already here a lot of time, and you've got another son at home, and you've got other things to do, and you need to look after yourself as well. And I'm not sure you being here more would is necessary. And it was just such
that's
a
very
kind,
sweet
thing. Mm. And I still felt funny, but it kind of made my shoulders drop and go, oh, someone sees that I'm doing my best, and maybe, and that's all we can ever do, right? That's,
yeah.
So what I'm saying is, I'm putting a hand on your knee, George, metaphorically.
Yeah.
And we just can't change the past, I think, and that's the hardest thing. And I think, you know, it's good that someone said regret is actually a good thing, because it informs the future, doesn't it? You think, well, actually, then I'll live my life slightly differently, and that's the gift we get from processing and not pushing all those thoughts and feelings down. And that sometimes can be healthy. They must have been incredibly proud of you in terms of your comedy and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so, they were. They were great. They were always telling people what I did for a living, and although always wanting me to go back to what I did when I started. So my mum would always say, I did like it when you did juggling. I did like when you did, and it's like, well, that's kind of that. Yeah, I was a street entertainer then, and I've kind of moved on since then. Yeah, but it was really good. All the magic, you know. But then I see that in my own parenting, you know.
The juggling, like
The juggling, and
they don't always do what you want. The kids, like my daughter's got a really amazing singing voice. And I was like, oh, you should do more singing. She's like, that's just what you want me to do. This is like the microwave, George. This is my microwave moment. I was like, you should do singing. You could be amazing. She's like, no, I want to be an artist. I was like, okay. You know, but they are different beings.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was a vicar. And I always say to dad, look, essentially, we have the same job. We stand up in front of people, and at the end, we pass around a plate and ask for money. And we make up lovely stories to make people feel better.
It is fun, isn't it? Things like, because my brother's a teacher, and when you see the parallels between doing stand-up and being a teacher, we'd often talk about, you know, a difficult class, and if you've got hecklers and all, you know, and there's so many, and how to deal with it, you know, if you're yelling at them, then that's not going to work. You know, you quieten down, you'd be cut, you know, and it's all same sorts of techniques.
Whereas my dad used to say to me, oh, don't, because I used to want to be an actor growing up, don't be an actor, there's no money in it, it's too hard, you never get a job. Just, you're very clever, why don't you get a proper job, get a good job, go on, don't, you know, and then here we are. Now I'm employing him.
And your parents must love that you do what you do.
I think so, but I genuinely think they always just wanted us to be happy and be all right. And if I was working in Forest Hill Sainsbury's, as I did when I was 16, I think they'd just be like, oh, well, are you paying your mortgage? Are you happy? Good for you. I think so, but maybe they're just very good liars.
They're Ellie's parents, and indeed Ellie's husband is an absolute joy after our shows. And in fact, after our Edinburgh show, Pete, Ellie's husband, came, and he was in tears. He literally was in bits. The pride. It was very nice. And I think that's one thing I miss about having spent the last 16 years here is my parents not coming to see the shows. They did come, I think it was like the night before my 40th birthday, so they were over here anyway. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, mum will get it, she's a mum. And dad, being a vicar, you know, there's some sex and shit in the show. But dad was all gushy, and he's like, brilliant, that's amazing. And mum was like,
Oh, how funny.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it probably was a lot. There was one bit where Ellie was doing me from behind on stage. I mean, that's not her cup of tea.
You were wearing a flesh-coloured catsuit under your lingerie.
Yes,
I was dressed as a man. What's not to like?
I know. Be proud, mother, be proud.
Well, I think we've covered all life's dramas. We've done Greg's, we've done grief. What else
from
is
Greg's
there?
To grief.
That's what we'll call it.
George
there.
Eggs.
There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Grief all the Greg's with George Egg.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's time for the Scummy Mummy Confessions. Now, always on our podcast, George, we ask the guests to share. It's a story of parenting failure.
It's very often about our own personal
weighing ourselves in inconvenient places and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Who would like to go first with today's confession?
Should I set the tone? I don't like to mention this, but I've been doing a lot of dating in the last couple of years, and I thought I would be proactive about my own health. So I ordered you can order STI kits. This is a lovely story. And so I thought,
I'll tell my husband.
Yes, yeah. I thought, look, no, I'm pretty sure I've got a clean bill of health down there. But I thought, just for peace of mind, I'd like someone to text me that I don't have gonorrhea. Wouldn't we all? Oh, it's a jolly thing. Anyway, so, but part of it is you have to give a vial of blood for HIV and for syphilis. Anyway, this is a great story. Anyway, so I had the vial and you get a little pinprick which goes plick, and then I didn't realize how much blood would come out of my finger, and I just had a shower and I hadn't had any breakfast, and you hold your hand over the vial and it all sort of, but I didn't realize how quickly the blood would come out, so the blood was just like kind of dripping all over the floor, and then I felt very lightheaded, and so I was holding the vial going, I must test whether I've got AIDS or not, and then I just fell into the wall.
Oh my god,
I don't think that's a symptom of AIDS, if that puts your mind
yes,
at rest.
Yes, no, that was good. So then I was just trying to compose, like slapping my own face trying to drip blood into a vial.
Oh crikey.
My god,
yeah. But anyway, I wiped it all down myself, the floor, the vial, and sealed it up and sent it off. So watch this space.
You don't see that on Sex and
I thought
the City,
you were going to say it.
I still don't know the results.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got
jackpot, full house.
Crumbs.
But anyway, I was trying to be a grown up and go, no, it's very good to know what's inside you. No, I don't know what I'm saying anyway. But that was my slapstick STI check. There's a story of
crikey.
Failure.
George, do you have any STIs currently?
I haven't got any. Well, I don't think so.
Don't,
I haven't
do
done
test,
any tests. Where are the tests?
I know. I've got them with my lateral flow, you see. It's good to know all diseases.
Yeah.
When you said about that, that reminded me of when my brother got his ear pierced when he was a teenager, and he didn't want a stud. He wanted a little ring. And so he got literally came home from having it done with a gun and got my dad to take the stud out and put a ring in.
Six weeks, you dickhead.
Exactly. And I remember it being all like that. And there was a bit of blood, and he saw the blood and then just went bang. And when I was doing the house, the wardrobe from my parents' room has still got a gouge down the front where my brother's watch just carved the front of the wardrobe as he collapsed onto the floor.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's a good one, isn't it?
Oh.
But that's their parenting. Do you have a habit as a parent of, like, if you're tidying up a table and there's a crumb of food, of just
human being
eating the crumb
human
while
bin.
you know if it's something of a reasonable size?
I would get a cloth.
Okay.
Helen
would
eat it.
That's
a new game on our podcast.
Yeah, anyway, so habitually, I kind of like, you know, like, well, so tidy up, and then they get the cloth, you know, maybe it's a bit of biscuit. And I remember just when the kids were really small, maybe it was when Jem, our eldest, was a baby, and picking something up off the table when I was tidying up like that, and then going, and just being really unsure if it was food, and then remembering that he'd had his nappy changed
on
the table, and just, I don't know what it was, but thinking,
listen,
I wonder if that was food.
You can't hack that snack. You cannot hack that snack.
So
that's a cack snack.
So, but I don't know. I might have eaten
your child's shit.
Baby ex. Yeah.
Indeed, the cack snacker.
Yeah.
But so that's horrible. But it might not have been. It might have just been a bit of soup or something.
I think we all know what it was, George.
Well, we just don't know.
A sultana that's on the turn.
There's no way.
I remember we had that in the show once, a woman saying, I picked a raisin off the stairs and ate it. Turns out it wasn't a raisin. Mm. Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another thing that I thought was just a parenting memory was I'm quite I get irritated with, because I always think my kids have been they're not fussy eaters and they're polite and, you know, and they say thanks for having me and all the right things. Mm. And I've always taught them to be modest and not greedy and so on like that. And I remember one birthday party that they had, we thought we'd do a lucky dip of prizes for, you know, for all the games. And so we got lots of nice little prizes. And then we thought, let's put a couple of, well, it was my idea. I said, let's put a couple of booby prizes in there, but that are big things. And say to the kids, so at the party, we said, look, you know, there's this box of wrapped up presents. If you win a game, you can choose a prize. But do bear in mind, there are some things in there that you might not want. Don't
gun.
Don't think
a horse's head. Yeah.
Razzle. I said, you know, don't think necessarily the larger things are better. Anyway, and there was one girl who won two prizes and picked the two biggest things. And one of them was a tin of whiskers and one of them was a wrapped up nappy. Used nappy, mind you.
Yeah.
But we didn't. We said, you've got to open the presents when you get home. And then,
George.
So she would have taken home these two things, unwrapped them, and the parents would have gone, why have you got a tin of whiskers and an unused nappy?
Oh.
But I thought it was quite a good like, sort of life lesson. I think my wife might have said at the time, really, do you think, yeah, it's good if they learn, you know, they learn don't be greedy.
They're not the lessons you need to teach other kids, though.
No,
no, of course it's all wrong. But
I went to a kids' party once where they had a pass the parcel and there was a little thing in every layer. Because you have to do that now in the 80s.
Yeah, no, one present.
Yeah, yeah. 40 layers of just paper.
And then it was a better game because towards the end people would be like,
yeah.
really slowly passing them and like looking at the dad on the record player.
Yes, and the musical chairs.
Yeah. These fucking mini Haribos for everyone.
No, but now everybody has to get a thing. But they put in the layers, they obviously didn't have enough of one kind of sweet. So they put in one layer, they'd put like Haribos. And then in the next layer, they'd put those lovely, healthy bear snacks made from dried fruit.
Yeah.
And the kids who got the fucking bear snacks.
No.
Oh, those faces. Oh. And then people knew it was coming. So a kid would get a Haribo and everyone else would be like,
I don't want it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, some Japanese.
And my son got the bear snacks and I could see his little face like, And he actually was quite good and was like, and I just was leaned down and said, I'll give you some Haribo when we get home, darling. And quietly took the bear snacks off him and chucked them at someone else. It's fine. Well, there we go. We're at the end, George. So where can people find you and the Snack Hacker?
Go to Instagram.
Excellent.
Yeah. Just look up George Egg on Instagram. I mean, if you look up George Egg generally, I've got a website, georgeegg.com.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And when you're on tour?
So at the moment I've revived my middle show, but for rural touring, which is really good fun, where you do like little village halls and things. They're really fascinating and remote places. So I've done ones in the Highlands and you literally get sort of 40 people of all ages. Everyone from the village comes and watches the show, and then you might get put up in someone's house, or you'll certainly get a meal cooked, you know, by a local. And they're really lovely. A really lovely sort of change from doing the theatres and the art centres.
Yeah,
So I've got some of those coming up, and then I've got the Best Of show that I'm going to do at Huntlith Comedy Festival, and then Edinburgh. Oh, and I tell you what else, I've become one of the co-hosts of Loose Ends.
Yes, I've heard you on the Radio 4. Turn on the radio, there he is, George Egg, chatting away.
Which is mad. And actually, that is one thing that my parents, because they're big Radio 4 listeners, they would have been so... That would have been a real thing they would have been proud of.
Oh, awesome.
Which is nice.
Mm.
But it's one of the leading arts culture programmes. And I think I've read three books. So
he culted you. I don't know
how. I don't know
how. You were
how
a magician.
That happened.
Listen, we got a gig doing a performance in front of a lot of financial journalists and investors at the House of Lords. So, yeah, talk about imposter syndrome. I remember at one point standing there in the gold cat suits singing a song about women's pensions, and the oil painting of Clement Attlee, the eyes were just following me around the room. And so, is this what he thought?
Sighing like that again.
Just this silly middle-aged slags. Yeah. What are they doing? It's not what he would have wanted.
No, we were earning money, but, you know, in a very strange way.
Excellent. Well, there we go. Thank you so much, George.
Thank
for
you
on the podcast. It's absolutely been lovely brilliant to have you.
And we can't wait to see your show in Edinburgh. Hopefully we're there at the same time.
I really hope we are. Yeah, I want to go and have drinks and things.
Absolutely.
Yes, we're hoping to go to Edinburgh, but in the meantime we're going all over the country, aren't we, Helen?
Yeah, we're in Cambridge, Horsham, I've gone blank.
Other places.
Trowbridge. Let us tell you about the festival that we will be in June.
So in June, we're going to the Derbyshire Sausage and Cider Festival.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Sausages, Cider, Scummy Mummies, tribute bands, Fleetwood Mac, The Police Force, Little Fix. They're all going to be there, George. It's going to be amazing.
I want to come.
Come! You must come. My father's going. Her brother's going.
Everybody's going. When in June is it?
It's Glastonbury weekend.
Oh, my Glastonbury.
No, Scott, Glastonbury's dead. Glastonbury's over. It's gone. It's dead.
Well, hopefully, I think I've kind of got a regular spot comparing the astrolabe there, so.
Well, we're comparing the big top at the Sausage and Cider Festival.
Well, do you know what? It's going to be.
Which is just as good.
It's going to be so good.
It's going to be amazing.
As long as there's a cover over, I'm happy.
Yes. Her brother is threatening to play the accordion while my father sings. What could possibly go wrong? It's all going to be
wonderful.
We'll
all be very jolly on cider. So that's my dream.
Thank you again, George. You've been amazing. Thank you, Helen Thorne.
Thank you, Ella Gibson.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening, listener.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right.
Until next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Who tries it as well, and they're all going, oh, this is really nice. And
sorry, I've got a self-cleaning coffee machine.
That's the self-cleaning coffee machine.
Don't worry, it's got another round.
It's douching itself.
Yes, it does.
That's nice.
It's half an hour after you make a coffee, it just...
Coffee enema is a thing as well, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, your friend...
Everything's a thing in Hampstead.
Your friend, I won't say her name, but she said, oh, it's a lovely thing, a coffee enema.
I remember my friend Matt...
We've got a friend whose name rhymes with Matt, but I won't say her name.
He got a funnel and a pipe and everything, and
what self
coffee
enemized. You'd have to get the angles.
Whole jar of gold blend.
I think he went for ground coffee.
Get the Nescafe.
I need some Colombian up my ass. Yeah.
I think, as far as I'm aware, he was on his back, sort of knees against the chest, and
I'd rather get a nice lady to stick a hose up my ass, to be honest.
I'd rather nobody started.
Just have a coffee. Conventionally.
A coffee and a laxative if you want to get really serious, but honestly, calm down. Goodness me. Anyway, coffee, laxatives, what were we talking about? Food. That's right.
Yeah, nice segue, actually.
Yes, it was the coffee machine, wasn't it?
Yeah,
doing
sorry.
It to itself. That's what distracted us.
I love being heckled by my own by
your appliances.
Shut up, coffee machine.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.